I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The J.C. Nichols Fountain is iconic. You see it on national TV, and every time you visit the plaza, it's named for a man who did great things in town, but who held deeply racist views and played a big part in dividing Kansas City along racial lines that persist even today. So is it time to rename the J.C. Nichols Fountain? Today, the ethics professors discuss the morality of memorializing historical figures whose beliefs don't pass muster today. I also ask whether a teacher who flipped the bird at the White House should face penalties, and if genome printing and artificial wombs have taken reproductive science too far. Later on, the Weekend To-Do List with Brian McTavish. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. A few weeks ago, I wrote a column for The Star about J.C. Nichols, the man who developed the Country Club Plaza in so many neighborhoods on both the Missouri and Kansas sides of the state line. The column said, in essence, that the city should take Nichols' name off the city's most glorious fountain at the eastern edge of the plaza. This is a fountain that Mr. Nichols helped bring to the city. It was installed in 1960. My thinking was this: the city should no longer honor J.C. Nichols because of the racist approach he took in developing his neighborhoods. In short, African Americans and Jews weren't allowed to live in Nichols subdivisions, and that policy has led to Kansas City remaining one of the most segregated cities in America. It also undermined economic and educational progress for Black Kansas Cityans. Well, as you might imagine, that column generated an avalanche of reader response, and it's generating a lot of questions today for our ethics professors. One main question: is it right to continue honoring people who did great things in the past, but whose moral positions wouldn't pass muster today? With us to answer that one are Wayne Vaught. He's the dean of the UMKC College of Arts and Sciences. He's also a professor of philosophy, medicine, and bioethics. He's one of my bosses at UMKC. Wayne, it's always good to have you. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Steve. Thanks so much.
Clancy Martin's also here. He's a professor in the Department of Philosophy at UMKC and a professor of business ethics at the Black School of Management. Clancy, always good to have you too.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Well, Wayne, some Southern leaders in this country are removing statues to Civil War heroes, and you know that's what got me thinking about this question regarding J.C. Nichols. So what do you think is right here? Is it right to continue honoring people who did, you know, great things in the past, but did it in a way that wouldn't be acceptable today?
Yeah, I think, you know, it really is sort of a balancing act. You're seeing statues, you're seeing other types of memorials that are being taken down and moved to different locations, certainly not on public properties, so that they're basically a state endorsement or state embracing of those issues. You're seeing it, I mean, it's widespread. You're seeing it. Harvard has removed names from living spaces that recognized people who were clearly advocates of segregation and, mm-hmm. and racial in their motivations. You're seeing, you know, we honor people in a wide variety of ways. Monuments and these types of things are one. Bill Cosby sort of is another example, and honorary degrees that we give to people. And the University of Missouri is to strip Bill Cosby of his honorary degree that they gave him because his ethical behaviors, what he was doing behind the scenes once that became to light, was something that the university said, this is not something mm-hmm. that we can now support and honor him in this way. So I think that there are clear examples ongoing and very contemporary, not just sort of in the distant past, of people who have been honored in one way or another for the accomplishments and the values and the things that they have done to have a meaningful impact on society. But nonetheless, once you find out some of these most deep, dark secrets of their past, and in some cases, not even all that deep, dark secrets is the case with Nichols, this was an overt and public and very blatant way of trying to create segregation and, in fact, imposing segregation against religion and racial minorities in the United States. And so I think that the issue becomes, on the one hand, we no one is a saint. I mean, no one that that we are going to memorialize, even the saints that we would memorialize.
Well, Clancy Martin might be an exception.
Well,
to that.
Yeah, right, for a different sort of whole different sort of set of reasons, but And now, if we're putting someone up for sainthood, even in that regard, I mean, if you went back into those people's actual personal lives and past, you're going to find some things that they were doing that would be Clancy saying, "Not for him." Yeah. No, there's nothing in his past that would in any way soil any honor that might be bestowed upon him. But I think that it would be this unreasonable expectation that you are going to say that everyone that we have memorialized has done nothing in their past. And I think it would set an unrealistic expectation, sort of that we are only going to praise people who are without sin. And so we have Christian documents that sort of point out who's the person without sin should throw the first stone, and no one can do that. So I think that we honor people recognizing their contributions and their flaws, as deep as some of those may be, and we should still continue to honor deeply flawed people who have made valuable contributions, because that's pretty much all the people I think that we really have to honor and recognize. Now, the question becomes, in some cases, you know,
maybe how big the flaw is.
How big the flaw is and what the impact is on society. So if you take something like the swastika, which is something that we now, I mean, you wouldn't honor that and put that on any public site. But that's an ancient symbol that's been connected with a wide variety of religious groups and thousands of years of history prior to it being adopted by the Third Reich and then adopting a whole new persona. I mean, it has now a deeply entrenched, embedded idea that has lasted 50 plus years on the psyche. So this would be a symbol that you should purge and remove from all structures and public spaces because of what it means. And I think that you would see similar things in certainly some of the Confederate leaders who were advocates for slavery and proponents of segregation and those sorts of injustices, that it makes sense to remove those statues. Even Joe Paterno, to take another political mm-hmm. figure, you know, we had a statue, we didn't, the Penn State had a statue of Joe Paterno. He got mired in all of the sexual abuse scandal. That statue was taken down because
right.
it was like, you know, it rose to a level that and the public understanding is that this is something, and he was in a position of responsibility in that case where he should have stopped something and I guess didn't. And so it was like, well, we can no longer continue to memorialize that. And I think that's what's coming up here with the question with the fountain, is that was what Nichols was doing, which obviously had a lot of good on Kansas City, had a lot of positive impact for some people in Kansas City.
I pointed that out. Yeah.
Nonetheless, mm-hmm. has if it is still associated, and I think this would have to be a community discussion, and you're getting a lot of interesting community discussion. I think it's right that you've raised it, and it's right that you've pointed in. And I don't know that I can say, well, this is the right or that's the right answer. I'm kind of curious as to what people think of Nichols, what people think of what he has done, what they think of him as a person. He wasn't the only one, obviously, and his policies weren't the only things that created the segregation that we still see in Kansas City. There were a host of other designers, highway architects, a lot of things that went into play that caused the racial inequalities that we currently see in Kansas City. And so I think it's a legitimate question to ask, and I think these are some of the variables that you would have to weigh in trying to figure out what's the right place to fall down on.
Well, let me assure you, I got a whole lot of response to that column, and they're still coming. I want to get Clancy's reaction too, but I also want to invite our listeners in here and get their thoughts on what they think about all this. Is it right to memorialize folks from the past, despite some of the moral positions they took then that wouldn't pass muster today? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, this notion, Clancy, that Wayne just touched on, that no one is perfect. Now, certainly I heard that a lot in some of the feedback I was getting here. No one's perfect, so maybe we can't memorialize anybody given that. I'm not sure I agree with that position, but I'm wondering how you size it up.
Well, I do think, and Wayne did touch on this as well, what we have to think about when we are memorializing people, which is really important that we do, people who have made great impacts on, great positive impacts on our society, it's important that we remember them. And none of us have traveled around Paris, for example, without admiring the fact that all the streets are named after great artists of the past. And we do this in our own way, and we should do it. However, the question we need to ask is not about the personal moral foibles of some person we are remembering and rightly memorializing for their contribution. We need to ask, what is the larger symbol that this this person may represent? Now, in the case of J.C. Nichols, I think some of the confusion has arisen from a kind of unstated tension between identity politics and the fashion of the moment and a really important kind of moral progress that we are making in our society. Mm-hmm. Now, the really important moral progress that we are making in our society, as I see it, is that we are increasingly acknowledging the fact of racism, the history of slavery, the fact of things like the truce divide in this city and other enduring racist sort of situations in our own community. Mm-hmm. And what some people are worrying about is that, oh, right now it's fashionable to take down these memorials. Mm-hmm. And so why would we simply follow this
it's
fashion?
It's PC run amok. At least exactly. That's what some readers told me.
Of course, yeah. That's what some of them are thinking. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's understandable because it is the fashion of the moment. But that's not what we're talking about with the J.C. Nichols fountain. We're not talking about following the fashion. What we're talking about is we have here a really important fountain, as you pointed out, in a central place where, as we know, every summer in particular, racial tensions tend to emerge.
That's right.
And so we have an opportunity to show that our city in particular, and hopefully our state as well, is doing everything it can to move past our history of racism, which crucially includes the acknowledgement of that history,
mm-hmm.
and bringing our attention, as you did, to something like the J.C. Nichols' pivotal role in the development and reinforcing of racism in our history, is this great opportunity for us. And we should all be very grateful, honestly, to you, Steve, for bringing it up, and to everybody who's talking about it. As Wayne says, the most important first step is to get this conversation going. And that is, you know, when we're thinking about the pragmatics of ethics, we have to talk about what the community standards are. But for me, this one is relatively non-controversial. There is a history of racism in this city. We've got a clear representative of it. We have a clear example of it being honored, and it needs to change. We've got moral progress. Let's show a little.
Well, you just articulated this very well. I should have had you write the column instead of me. 816-235-2888 is our number here. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to Ron from Kansas City, Missouri. Ron, nice to have you. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I just wanted to say that if you guys are going to change the name, that's fine, as long as it's something that's more inclusive of everyone, like maybe a current community leader that's bridging that gap and bringing people together. Or if you do keep it the same, then go ahead and put his accomplishments plus on the other end of the pendulum, what he did stand for as far as segregation and how it did affect other communities generations later. You know, mm-hmm. That way we get the pros and the cons. The good and the bad, you know, and it's not sugar-coated.
I think that's exactly right. I think if we are going to keep his name on this fountain, we should have some detailed plaque about both the good that this man did for the community and the bad that he did mm-hmm. for the community.
I heard
community.
That from a number of people, that's the way to approach this, and I appreciate that thought, Ron.
Yeah, because that's throughout our whole entire country, you know, not just with that fountain, but if you go back to Thomas Jefferson, and you know, some of the great things he did, but at the same time, some of the bad things that he did,
right.
You know, that are still affecting people to this day.
Right. Ron, thanks for the good call. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
Let's go to some other ones here. Michael from Raytown. Michael, you're on Up to Date. Michael sees both sides of this issue. Nice to have you, Michael.
Hi there. How you doing?
Well.
I see both sides of this issue. We don't want to glorify some horrible things that have been done in the past, but like our last caller said, Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner, so obviously he supported slavery. He signed, you know, our Constitution, which declared that African Americans were not fully human, And yet, does that mean we should take down the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
You know, that's an interesting question. And again, I heard that from a lot of listeners, too. One big complaint was Jackson County, Missouri, where we're broadcasting this show today, named after Andrew Jackson, known for wiping out a whole lot of Native Americans back in his time. Mm-hmm. Wayne, what about it?
Now, I
once you start this ball rolling, you know, Michael's arguing you'd be rolling it a long way.
And I think the issue, and some of the callers have pointed out, is that what is good is that we need to, I mean, we can't remove and not rewrite. And I think you said that you're not rewriting history in one of your pieces. You're
right.
Just trying to not celebrate some negative
yes.
sides of the history. And I think that what we don't want to lose sight of is what these people were doing and the history that comes behind it. And I think that several people have already pointed that out, is there should be some way. I mean, this fountain really is significant. And I think Clancy's point that there are racial tensions that continue to occur right in this spot. And so kind of taking this as a focal point for how do we address this? How do we continue to recognize the history of the man and the person who is involved? But nonetheless, maybe it's some type of renaming and some type of nonetheless historical recognition around the fountain so that mm-hmm. people can follow and understand and appreciate the history. Because I think the last thing we want to do is just kind of remove everything from the public sphere as well mm-hmm. of people who promoted certain racial ideologies because – you know, we do still, I think, need to be reminded of that past because we're not past it. And we need to continually be reminded of it
yeah.
and reflecting on it so that it doesn't continue to be pervasive, though. I mean, it is continuing to be pervasive. And so to have this type of discussion and to do something with this fountain that sort of helps us recognize where we were, where we are, and where we hope to be are things that I think could be incredibly valuable in the city sort of stepping up and saying we're gonna take this on to say that mm-hmm. we are rejecting the historical ideologies of the past that Nichols was certainly part of. This is where we are, this is where we're gonna be, and somehow using this fountain as a way of celebrating that progress, which I think Clancy also referred to.
We should also remember.
Clancy, I just want to point out real quickly, and one of our colleagues influenced my thinking on all this. Whitney Tyrrell of our English department wrote a book a few years ago, The King of Kings County, mm-hmm. where he dealt with this issue head on. And that was a precursor that helped me bring me to the place that I am. What about this notion, Clancy, of what our caller just raised? If we're going to rename the fountain, why not rename the Jefferson Memorial and Jackson County, and then you just go on and on?
I want to agree with you that Whitney's book, The King of Kings
yeah.
County, is terrific on this issue and many Kansas City issues. But on the caller's issue, we have to think about not only the degree and kind of a particular honored individual's moral failings. We also have to think of the degree and kind of a particular individual's moral contribution. And I don't think that the caller means to compare Jefferson or Jackson to J.C. Nichols. And that's relevant. That's directly relevant. If we felt like J.C. Nichols had made enormous morally important contributions, that would add extra nuance and extra consideration to the conversation. But I don't think anyone's arguing that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have a tendency to, in philosophy, we call this a slippery slope argument, and it's a traditional informal fallacy of argument. When you go to the most extreme possible conclusion as a way of making an argument, you're really not thinking the argument through, because we are perfectly capable of making incremental steps, and we do it all the time. And it doesn't mean that we're making incremental steps to some kind of disastrous conclusion.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
That's what human life is, and especially moral life is. You know, we say that lying is wrong, but we say so most of the time and in most instances. And we say that changing a memorial is the right thing to do, but not in every instance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to some calls here. James, I think, disagrees with us here. James from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. It's kind of ironic. I just sent you a very lengthy email on this issue and I'm not going to go into it, but the essence of my comment is leave the name of the fountain, because we're now trying to apply today's moral standards to a period of time where these standards didn't exist. And it is something unseemly about that. You just can't do that to people.
Mm-hmm. But James, you can. I mean, the argument would be, yes, you can. Times change, and we're changing with it.
Yeah, but you can't change the time when those events occurred. That's what you're trying to do.
Oh, no, that is certainly not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is change the significance and the location of the recognition. So what we're trying to do is change what does this fountain mean for us today? And what we don't want to be talking about is what the fountain meant back in 1960. Because if we did talk about what the fountain meant in 1960, we might have to say the fountain stood for white supremacy. The fountain stood for economic segregation. The fountain stood. We might be having a conversation we really don't want to have.
Mm-hmm.
What the conversation we're having about today and about our morals today is that, you know what? Do you know anyone who thinks racism is a good thing or economic segregation is a good thing? Because happily, I don't think I do. And now this is a symbol of precisely those things, and we've got an opportunity to change its nature as a symbol. We can change its nature as a symbol to the fact of collaboration, the fact that we oppose those things. And even if that means, as a previous caller suggested, increasing the amount of education around the fountain, that would at least be a gesture towards reconciliation, towards apology for the past, towards moving as a society here in Kansas City, where it's really important that we do this, towards mutual respect.
You know, James, one of the things I wrote in my most recent column on this is this idea that, hey, yes, J.C. Nichols was a man of his times, but other men during those times recognized the problems with racism and moved beyond it. One of J.C. Nichols' contemporaries was a one-time segregationist whose name was Harry Truman. And Harry Truman, you know, as president, one of his landmark achievements was desegregating the armed forces. Right at the time when J.C. Nichols was at the height of his power, here's Harry Truman desegregating the armed forces. Harry Truman, who once looked down his nose at all kinds of people of color and then found a way to sort of rise above it. To me, that's a mark of a great man, you know, versus what Mr. Nichols did at one point.
And Harry Truman was one of my favorite presidents.
Sure.
Because when I went in the military as a commissioned officer in 1965, there was less than 5% of the officer corps were African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And even that was 17 years after that decree was entered, executive order. And so we really didn't have a lot of integration in the military at that time,
right,
and opportunities. But again, I heard the comments earlier that Bill Cosby has had his honorary degrees withdrawn. His behavior contemporarily was inappropriate, and they should have been withdrawn. Paternal, his behavior contemporarily was wrong at the time, even mm-hmm. this time, and should be withdrawn. But you're singling out Nichols, Civil War heroes from the South, and saying their behavior was so horrible that we should take down the memorials for whatever they did, and we should rewrite the history about them. And again, from my viewpoint, and I happen to be an African American, maybe the energy we're spending talking about these type of things should be put to some better use of addressing current issues,
mm-hmm.
whether it's improving the education, universal health care, paying better money to teachers, first responders. There are so many other things that we can put our energy and
right.
efforts in, rather than, hey, J.C. Nichols is a bad guy, we have a fountain that honors him, and let's take it down. I mean, tell me how that's going to improve anybody's life in the general community of Kansas City, and specifically African Americans.
Right.
I mean, you know, you change the name of the fountain, it's not going to make a difference in my life.
James, I get it, and I appreciate your call very much. Thanks very much.
Yes, sir.
You bet. Let's go to Denise from Kansas City, Missouri. Denise, you're on Up to Date. You there, Denise? Maybe not. You know, again, just directly this notion, Clancy, of if we rename the fountain, do we have to rename the county and rename the Jefferson Memorial? Again, to wrap this up, your point is we don't.
Clearly, we don't have to. No, and it's excellent that we're having the conversation. The one thing I would like to say about the previous caller's comment is that, of course, he's right. We need to be having those conversations, too, about concrete impacts that racism are presently having. And we are.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one more part of this conversation that we should be having in Kansas City about how racism came to be, the impacts it is having now, and little things we can do to improve it.
Yeah. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to switch topics here with our good ethics professors. We're going to talk about a Warrensburg middle school teacher who did something a little untoward the other day. He turned his back on the White House and raised his hands in the version of flipping off the White House. We'll talk about how appropriate that was and what should be the fate of this particular middle school teacher. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday on the show, we got summer safety tips for kids from local pediatricians. You can find that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, we'll meet the leader of the Missouri Democrats and discuss the future of that political party, which has seen little success lately at the ballot box. That's tomorrow. Stephen Weber, chairman of the Missouri Democratic Party, will be here tomorrow on the show. Well, this hour, we're talking ethics with our two ethics professors, Wayne Vaught and Clancy Martin, both from UMKC. We're going to flip topics here and go to this notion of what happened a few weeks back when a Warrensburg middle school teacher posted a Facebook photo of himself flipping off the White House with both hands raised. He was in Washington, not on a school-related trip, but on a trip that was sponsored by a private company. Needless to say, this has stirred a healthy debate in Warrensburg, and the district is reviewing whether that teacher violated the district policy or if a teacher can be held accountable for policy violations outside of the school environment. Some are even calling for his ouster. Others point out that there's something called the First Amendment that protects his freedom of expression. So the question for our ethics professors is, can teachers be restrained from posting, personal views? Should this teacher be fired? Clancy Martin, what do you make of it?
Well, we do have such a thing as professional ethics that governs the norms of behavior of teachers, all kinds of instructor, well, people in all of their professions. Now, how that said, this fellow was acting privately. He was on a private trip. It's his private Facebook page. It has nothing to do with the school. So it seems to me rather straightforward that this fellow was well within his constitutionally protected rights, a constitutionally protected right that is important to us, the right to free speech. And what was what he did ill-advised, given the fact that he's a teacher, clearly? Was it...
He's a role model for students
exactly.
over there, Clancy.
Yeah, exactly. Was it what I would recommend to, you know, for the kind of intellectual nuance we want to see out of the role models for our students? No.
You can see a lot of nuance here then
in
this gesture of flipping off the White House. Yeah, okay.
It was a ill-considered thing to do. And if he's, however, that said, if he's willing to take whatever the consequences are, he's in a noble tradition. I mean, Socrates was very, very... Many people have said in the history of thinking about Socrates, he was foolish to deliberately antagonize the court that was considering putting him to death. But he was taking a kind of moral stand and he was willing to pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
So if this fellow was like, well, I don't care how dumb it was, I'm willing to be fired over this, then I think, you know, we have to support him. Is the school board doing the right thing in considering an ouster? I don't even think they're doing the legal thing. And morally speaking, they're clearly not doing the right thing.
You know, Wayne Vaught, you're one of the top administrators at UMKC, and you deal with issues with like this with some regularity. What do you make of it? Should this teacher be fired, or how would you handle a situation like this?
It's going to come down largely to whether a person's engaged in protected speech, whether a person is engaged in business-related speech. And I think that's sort of the point that you've pointed out. One of the distinctions that you have to make here is whether this person was working, say, for a private school. So if he was working, say, for a private Christian school or something in the area and he did this, that school could fire him and that would be their prerogative and there wouldn't be a whole lot they could do. You could argue whether he was within his professional rights or not. When you start talking about public employees working at public institutions in a public school like this, public employees get a whole lot more protections and freedom and First Amendment protections than someone working in the private sector does. So that's one of the things that certainly comes into play and is one of the things that public administrators have to be very cognizant of, is that people have a lot of discretion into what they say and do, and the Constitution there is there to protect that. Now, he was engaged in free speech, albeit crude. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was making crude gestures at the White House, though he was expressing his ideas. He wasn't doing it. I don't believe there were kids in the background that he was taking on a field trip to D.C. and had them all flipping off the White House. Then you get into an issue, okay, now he's acting within his professional role in professional conduct that the universities or that the school districts do have a right and, in fact, an obligation to try to control and can instill certain levels of professional behaviors. So the fact that he's off on his own, was this even during the school year? Was he on contract or off contract?
I think it was fairly recent, which suggests it was during his summer vacation. But I'm not certain of that.
Yeah. It raises a lot of challenges and things that, you know, a lot of the founders of the Constitution, a lot of free speech advocates throughout history have maintained that, you know, what we really need to do is to protect people's right to speak and to do things, and then our right to be critical of them. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we can look on this teacher and be dismissive, say, you know, this really wasn't a morally upstanding way of or certainly not a very articulate way of expressing your attitudes or discontent with the presidency.
Yeah.
There were better and more effective ways of doing that, but that's the way you chose to do. And there can be, I think, a conversation about it. And certainly what he did is nothing. I don't think that any of the kids that he's working with would be surprised or haven't probably done themselves at some point. So how offensive that behavior is, now, that's one thing. I mean, he could obviously be doing other things that would be so detrimental, perhaps even to the running or of the institution, that they may have reasons for disciplining someone for doing certain types of things. And certainly if they were doing illegal things outside of the scope of their job.
So if this was me, one of your professors, I know you would, you know, you've been looking for the opportunity for how many years now, but you know, I'm on summer vacation. I'm not teaching a class. I'm taking a private vacation. I'm in Washington and I do that and post it on Facebook. Can you fire me?
I don't think so. I wouldn't do much about it at all. I could, you know, if I started to get criticisms, I might bring those to your attention and say, hey, you're getting some students who are saying about it. I just want to let you know that this is what's going on. But no, it certainly wouldn't rise to the level. I would think that you were engaging in your protected speech and would say, you know.
Why don't we get our listeners involved here quickly, Clancy. 816-235-2888. Should he be fired or should he not be? I'm interested in your opinion. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let me go to Dale from Kansas City, Kansas. Dale, good morning.
Good morning. I was expressing my view that he should not be fired. As a matter of fact, I don't even know what he taught. He taught social studies. He probably teaches things like the Constitution, which gives private individuals certain rights. And your associate brought up about what if they have a contract. Well, my experience with those teaching contracts, and I happen to be a retired teacher, is that the language deals with offenses that would be considered criminal. And his is certainly not criminal. He's expressing an opinion, and he's white.
I think I lost you there. So, I think you're gone here, Dale. I'm sorry. But there is this notion, though, I mentioned it a second ago. He's a role model. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be a role model for the kids he teaches. He's supposed to be a role model in the community, in this case, Warrensburg. Is that a factor in all this?
Well, I think it is, but it does get to the question of what do we consider good role models and who's going to make that determination. And I think that with the point the caller was trying to get to before probably his call was dropped, sound like a cell phone, the contracts deal with criminal behavior, and there are certainly things that one can do that are illegal. Mm-hmm. And conduct that would be unseemly for anyone. And this is getting into this area it's a lot more gray. And some people, I strongly suspect that there are people who are advocates of what he did. Said, yeah, you go give it to them. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are going to be offended. And that's what a good democracy is about.
So some folks might think he's a good role model, you're suggesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. There could mm-hmm. be people at least don't think that he's a bad role model. I don't know that anyone would say, this is exactly the type of behavior we want people to demonstrate. Mm-hmm. But at least they would not say, well, what he was doing was within a sphere of protected speech, and he was not doing anything that they might consider to be terrible. So,
yeah.
You know, we get into this debate about role models, and a lot of people, a lot of public figures, athletes, and a lot of people have this sort of weight of being a role model put on their shoulders, and some adamantly want to reject it. Teachers are a little bit different because they are in direct contact with students and trying to instill certain types of professional behaviors, but there's the beauty of our country is that it provides a wide range of acceptable behaviors, and I suspect for some this falls within that range.
Evelyn from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on with our ethics professors. Evelyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Evelyn.
Well, I think that the teacher shouldn't be fired. He's exercising his First Amendment rights, and more, that's so important for people to be able to speak up and express themselves, whether it's through their body language or through their speech. And moreover, I understand the fact that he's a teacher and he should set a good example, but we have a person who leads our government right now who breaks all those rules in terms of civility or whatever. And so if we're going to start by firing someone because they're offensive,
right,
we should start firing him first before we pick on a little teacher from Warrensburg.
Right, I appreciate that. I'm wondering, two wrongs make a right there, Clancy? How do you regard that?
Well, one of the things that we should always remember when we're talking about this, and especially these days with the assault on the media from the same person the caller was referring to, is that free speech is supposed to be hard, and it's not supposed to be hard for the person speaking. It's supposed to be hard for all the people listening.
Interesting. We go to Carla from Warrensburg. Carla, you're on Up to Date.
Yes, thank you. I happen to know the gentleman, and I do believe he was within his rights. And free speech is the hardest to protect when we don't agree with it. But students were not around, and he was on his own time, and it was during the summer months. But he's very passionate about what he believes, and a lot of us, I think, here in middle America see the extremes that our president and other politicians are exercising in their speech. And I think sometimes we don't feel like we have the ability to speak back.
Mm.
And knowing the gentleman as I do, he was expressing his frustration with the current administration and just how awful some of the things that have been said and done under the guise of the presidency have been conducted.
Carla, just really quickly, I got 15 seconds left. How much of a debate is going on in Warrensburg these days over this?
Quite a bit. There's
quite a
parent in particular who is basically after this gentleman's job.
Okay. We're going to leave it there. Carla, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. And we'll have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank Wayne Vaught, the dean of the UMKC College of Arts and Sciences, Clancy Martin, a professor in the Department of Philosophy, both of them at UMKC. Thank you very much for coming in today, guys.
Thanks
Always
for
good
having
Thanks
you.
So much for having us, Steve.
Coming up, Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. And Brian McTavish is here to talk about cool stuff to do on the weekend, and that's Queen. I recognize Queen. I'd recognize him anywhere.
It's Queen Plus.
Plus.
Adam Lambert.
Queen's going to be here. Adam Lambert's going to be here.
Well, yeah, it's really great. You know, your favorite band goes away, and everybody thought if Queen was their favorite band in 1991, that Queen was, except for classic rock radio, Queen was history, right? Because
yeah.
Freddie Mercury's untimely death occurred back in 91.
Right.
Boy, it's been a long time.
Yes.
Well, surviving members, those who wish to continue to participate, including the guitarist and the drummer for Queen, they said, hey, we want to keep playing live. So in the mid-2005 or so, they got together with Paul Rogers, who was the front man for Bad Company. And before that, I think a band called Free in the 60s. And they had a good run from like 2005 to 2009, touring around the world as Queen plus Paul Rogers.
Right.
Well, in the last few years, I think this is even better, because this guy, Adam Lambert, he was a runner-up not too many years ago on American Idol.
Oh, that's where I recognize him.
Yeah, right. And
there
so Lambert teamed up on television, various little gigs and stuff, and tested the waters with Brian May, the guitarist for Queen, and met with his approval. And so now, for the last few years, fans of Queen is alive, Queen is well. It's Queen plus Adam Lambert, classic rock, reinvented, reimagined, reworked, but still faithful to the Freddie Mercury thing. 8 o'clock, Sunday night, Sprint Center. That would be a show we should go see.
No, thanks.
Okay, how about if
I
go...
I don't like Queen.
Wow. You were good not to mention that up front.
I was more reserved this time.
Okay.
I usually am about cats and things like that. I held it in.
Oh,
so.
You mentioned cats, but I'll let that go.
Yes. What do we have here?
Okay, so that sounds okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'll take it.
All right. Hope he doesn't own a cat. Anyway, that's Corey Feldman. Does that name ring a bell?
No.
This will ring a bell. He was one of the child stars in movies like Gremlins back in the 80s. He was in The Goonies. He was also in the really, really good movie Stand By Me.
So he has high-class pedigrees, what you're saying, to emerge now in the scene.
Well, let me clarify.
Yes.
He's a former child movie star who reinvents himself every few years, right? He's also been frequently publicly troubled. So he's kind of blamed his mother for being a stage mom and starting him doing commercials when he was 3. So he's had his ups and downs and all arounds. Last year, he goes on the Today Show with his all-female band, The Angels, which includes his wife. They're really playing and singing behind him. And he puts on what could be charitably described as an odd performance. He's sort of slinking around and singing sort of an electro dance music song. I think it was this song, as a matter of fact. Anyway, next thing we know, there's a 40-city tour starring...
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, bad publicity, good publicity, just bring on the publicity. So you're going to get
Corey
Feldman.
Bob Dole, you say, just spell my name right. I don't care what you say about me.
That usually works. Anyway, the former child star will share his strangely appealing to many, I think, still pop music side at 8:30 Friday night at the Record Bar. And you may be there in spirit.
Maybe.
In spirit.
Be sure to see Brian's 6 people-pleasing things to do in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to kcur.org. Now we're going to talk about something that intrigues me, the Million Dollar Quartet showing at the New Theater Restaurant.
That's right. It's
a little slice of a little history here.
Well, I'm going to let's drill down a bit into yesteryear, which I know will be shocking to you when I come on. I hardly ever like to talk about what used to be, but here we go again. It's the Million Dollar Quartet. Now, let's set it up. It's the Broadway musical inspired by the totally unplanned jam session involving Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins on December 4th, that evening in 1956, where else but at Sun Record Studios in Memphis, Tennessee.
They actually jammed in that studio together.
Elvis was famous. He just put out his brand new record that year. It had big hits like Don't Be Cruel, written by Otis Blackwell, the great Otis Blackwell. And so Elvis comes back home, basically, to Memphis and Sun Studio, right? And who should be there, or who shows up very soon after Elvis does. You've got Johnny, Carl, and who's the other guy?
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Oh, he wouldn't like it if I said that.
No, you wouldn't.
Don't forget the killer. That's right. So anyway, that's what the show is sort of loosely based on, opening tonight at New Theater Restaurant. I thought it would be fun to listen to some real Million Dollar Quartet music. So here's a little chit-chat. It's an old recording never intended for commercial release. They actually rolled tape during the jam session, right?
Huh.
And it was commercially released many years later, but the sound quality is not so great. So folks, lean into your speakers. Here's Elvis doing Paralyzed.
All I gotta do is stand paralyzed.
That's the way I thought about recording after it done come out. I thought about doing it the same way he done Don't Be Cruel, you know? It says, when you looked into my eyes,
slower, you know.
Well, I stood there like I was a hypnotized. Well, you sent up a feeling to my spine, a feeling warm and smooth and fine. All I could do was stand there paralyzed.
You know, when you were talking about this, yeah. I was thinking, boy, I wish somebody had rolled tape. But they did roll
tape.
They
did. And, you know, this was a totally impromptu, relaxed thing. Yeah. They sang gospel songs. I'm not sure you get much of that in the new theater show. But this was a Broadway hit about 10 years ago.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, it's going to be a celebration, a party. The Million Dollar Quartet. Check it out. And it runs through September if you can't make it this weekend.
What do we have here?
I see tassels.
Yes, I sense it. I sense it.
It's not the tassels, it's what you do with them.
Yeah.
That counts. I can give you a demo later if you'd like.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no, thank you.
As they like to say on stage at burlesque shows, suffer. So here we have the Burlesque Downtown Underground's 10-year, count them,
wow.
10 years.
Wow.
It's a big anniversary. It's a big extravaganza. Four shows, 7 and 10 o'clock, both Friday and Saturday night at the Musical Theater Heritage Theater at Crown Center.
And finally today.
You just got it.
What do we have here?
Okay.
I thought 4th of July was past us.
It is technically,
but it's not in spirit.
Forecasts of rain earlier in the week, and there were a few drops on folks who went out to see 4th of July fireworks, but you can catch your last 4th of July fireworks blast at 7:30. The party starts. The fireworks start at 9:30 at the Kearney Amphitheater in Kearney, Missouri, just a half an hour north of KC.
That's Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. On tomorrow's show, we'll discuss the future of the Democrats in Missouri with the leader of that party. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.